The Farming Programme with Araquip Steel Stockholders, Withambrook Industrial Estate Grantham, supplying the region for over 40 years.
The Week in Agriculture. This is The Farming Programme.
Good morning and happy Sunday. I'm not Steve Orchard. You probably noticed. This is Andy Marsh. It's a long time since Steve had a bit of a holiday, so he's busy getting on with a well-earned rest. That means I'm here this week and next. Steve will be back in 2 weeks' time. Today, cases of blue tongue have been discovered in northeast Lincolnshire. We speak to Louth Livestock Market about the impact on them.
The sooner the restrictions are over, the better for everybody involved.
Also, the threat to bees from Asian hornets. We're finding out about a group of Lincolnshire farmers and how they're looking to tackle it.
They've overrun France and there's 500,000 nests. Gives you an idea of the sort of ecological disaster that they represent.
And we also find out about British Food Fortnight.
We really do need to now get that message across to the public how important to buy British food and support the producers and the farmers.
Plus there's agronomy with Sean, the markets, the crop report and weather for the week ahead.
The Week in Agriculture. This is The Farming Programme.
We'll come to the blue tongue issue in just a moment, but first, farmers leaders have called on the government to truly value food security by raising the UK's agricultural budget. The National Farmers Union wants to increase it to £5.6 billion a year. They say it's needed to give farmers the confidence to invest in the future and produce sustainable and affordable food. Farming UK is reporting sheep and cattle populations have hit a record low. Figures for June show a 4.3% year-on-year decline in sheep. That's a reduction of more than 600,000. There's also been a 2% drop for cattle. Last week, it was confirmed cases of blue tongue disease have been discovered in northeast Lincolnshire. Now, just in case you don't know, it's caused by midges and affects cattle and particularly sheep, and in some cases it can be fatal. A control zone with restrictions on the movements of animals extends to parts of East and West Lindsay, as well as northeast Lincolnshire. It's led to the decision for Louth Livestock Market not to open tomorrow. Now, I've been speaking to Russell Jeans, who's one of the directors there. I asked him to explain exactly why they've made that decision.
The market is now within the temporary control zone as a result of blue tongue cases being found in the northeast corner of the county. Consequences of that is that restricts the movement of livestock in and out of the temporary control zone. And as a result, that provides fairly significant issues for the market in its general operations. So we've had to take the decision to not have a market on Monday. The situation is constantly evolving. So we're watching very carefully as to how the temporary control zone extends. And that will obviously open matters up and enable people to hopefully operate closer to as normal if that happens.
Just looking at it, this appears to be a relatively small area covered by the control zone, which I guess is at least a small positive, but there are plenty of negatives too.
Yeah, absolutely. So the fact it's a relatively small zone in the northeast corner of the county, with the restrictions on livestock movements out of that, the problems occur because there's quite a significant number of vendors, purchasers, abattoirs that are outside of the zone. The movement of stock to those from the market is very complicated and in certain circumstances just not possible.
Obviously, looking at what's happened, this is not good news at all. But in general terms, just how much of a concern is this for sheep and cattle farmers in this area?
Short to medium term, it's significant. We're running into our busy period with sales. So all those store cattle farmers would be planning to bring their cattle to Louth at the beginning of October. That is a problem. The other aspect to consider is, you know, someone who needs to sell fat lambs or fat cattle every week for cash flow purposes and the fact that, you know, they're going to be running out of potentially space. There are all sorts of logistical issues which people are going to have to get their heads round. The sooner the restrictions are over, the better for everybody involved. It's just a very difficult situation for everybody to get their head round. And I think positive side of it is that it is a disease which replicates in the carrier, which is obviously insects, a midge, which ultimately will not replicate when the temperature drops below 12 degrees. When it does and stays there for a period of approximately 3 weeks, the government will look at minimising any restrictions, getting things back to normal. So it's at the right end of the summer for it to happen for this area, but it still has massive implications while it's here.
OK, so Monday for the livestock market is definitely out. You're not entirely sure when you'll reopen. How exactly will you make that decision?
We've obviously sent an email out to everyone on our market database so that everyone is kept in the loop as to what the position is. We've explained that we're shut on Monday because the government vets are testing constantly in the area. That has an implication on what our decision-making processes are for the coming days and weeks. We're having to constantly watch it, and our decisions about when we start having a market again will be based on the size of the zone and various other aspects. But fundamentally, that's, you know, because it's so fluid and it's moving and it, you know, we're trying to sort of react to that. That is the only way we can do it.
That's rather worrying, and of course we'll keep you updated. Now, you've probably heard about the influx of Asian hornets into the UK and the dangers to our very own bees. I've been speaking to Stuart Mayer about the issue and his mission to the Channel Islands to find out how they've been coping. First of all, I asked him why it's such a concern for Lincolnshire.
It's an invasive species. Honeybees and other pollinators haven't really evolved to coexist with them and don't really have much of a defence against them, and they're a voracious predator. If you consider one Asian hornet nest will consume 11 kilograms in weight of insects during the summer. And if you think that they've overrun France and there's 500,000 nests, then that gives you an idea of the sort of ecological disaster that they represent.
And what's the impact if all of a sudden they're replacing bees? The impact on wildlife and farming, etc.?
Honeybees specifically, they prey heavily on honeybee colonies, to the extent that they sort of irreparably weaken them and they struggle to overwinter. They don't hunt exclusively on honeybees. They'll take everything. The amount of insect life that they consume, that can have quite a serious impact on bird life and all the rest of it, because, you know, birds and other animals will rely on insects as part of their food chain. So it can have quite an effect across a broad spectrum of our environment, really.
I think I'm right in saying there's no confirmed sightings in Lincolnshire, but they are getting close.
2023 was the year that Asian hornets became a reality for us in the UK. DEFRA discovered 75 nests in the southeast of the UK. The concern is their spread is that fast. With that number of nests discovered in the southeast, it's putting us at risk in Lincolnshire. Every year now, it's an omnipresent threat that we have to be aware of so that we can take measures to eliminate them if we do indeed find any.
Is it the case that this is just the matter of time before they do come into Lincolnshire?
There's the million-dollar question. You would have to think that ultimately we're going to see them in Lincolnshire. This year we've been fortunate. There was a really long winter. Spring was dreadful. And so for hornets and wasps, things like that, that was a pretty bad start to the year. But all we really need is a favourable set of weather conditions in the spring. More of them will survive their winter hibernation, and then we could see a spread up through the country. It's just something we have to be vigilant on now.
So very concerning. What measures can you take to try and combat them?
What we've decided to do in Lincolnshire, try and get ahead of the game, really. Now, in the Channel Islands, they've been combating Asian hornets for about 8 or 9 years. Because of their close proximity to France, they just fly over to Jersey from France. We've put together a project where we are funding some Lincolnshire beekeepers to go over and work with the Jersey Asian Hornet team. And we have 4 volunteers going over. And then next year, another 4 will go over. And they will specifically learn the methods that Jersey have to combat them. Once there's Asian hornets sightings and they've been notified, it's basically the skills to track and trace those hornets back to their nest. The idea is we'll have sort of 8 to 10 people sort of fully trained up in all 4 corners of Lincolnshire, so that if we do start seeing them in our county, then we're more able to deal with them than maybe other regions.
And to that end, you're thinking to yourself, we need to monitor this carefully, so if and when it does happen, you're ready to bring those measures in place.
That's right. Ultimately, we rely on the public. It's the public that will see hornets and notify them. For recognition purposes, Asian hornets, they're a little bit smaller than the European hornet. They're probably twice the size of a regular wasp, largely black with yellow legs. There's a really easy to use Asian hornet app that you can download onto your phone, and that allows you to take a photo onto that app and it immediately downloads it with the location and everything, so that any potential sighting is then triaged by somebody who knows what they're looking for. Lincolnshire Beekeeper Association, we're a relatively small charity, but the commitment and the financial commitment that we've given to basically fund sending our members over to Jersey, that's an indication of the level of commitment that we've got. Without that commitment, really, our bees, other pollinators are doomed, quite frankly.
Thank you, Stuart. Time now for agronomy, and we say good morning to Sean Sparling.
Yes, morning, Andy. Long time no speak. Heck of a week of weather for you to come back to as well. Amounts of rainfall have been incredibly variable this year, and I was talking to a client of mine on Tuesday. He farms about 15 miles away from me, and things are proper dry out there. Soil's cracked, almost arid on his farm. Never thought I'd say that this year, but he registered just 11 mil of rain for August and has had less than 10 mil so far this month. I took 22.8 mil in August, and I've already taken over 48 mil in September. Lincoln Heath, Sunday into Monday, over 35 mil of rain. A mile up the road, just 18 mil. So this week we've seen amazing variability in amount, and with some groves getting significant quantities of water this week, with all of us getting a bit of the wet stuff at least, and that coupled with the high winds that we've seen over the last 7 days, along with late drilled spring crops proving very slow to ripen and finish in many places this year, harvest still out there to get for many growers still. And that means that any pre-harvest applications of glyphosate onto spring beans, late drilled spring barley, spring wheats, winter wheat, linseed, etc., they've all been very difficult to get on because of the weather, and therefore checks should be made on those crops where glyphosate is still planned to be applied to see either if it's still necessary, if the crops are now ripening well enough on their own, or whether as soon as things dry up you do need to be in there combining, and so the harvest interval of 7 days with glyphosate is likely to be compromised. But where weed control was originally deemed necessary to help combining, then that ticket is likely to still be valid. 30% moisture or less, of course, for glyphosate in cereals. Most of the pods want to be back in beans. We're pretty much there now. Spring linseed timing can be a bit trickier, particularly this year with a lot of infield variation. Glyphosate now the only pre-harvest option for most crops with that 30% moisture timing. But in linseed, the timing is based primarily on the seed colour. Seeds should be turning from white to light brown. The pods are going to be a yellowy green, and all of the lower leaves will have already dropped off. But there is an EMU in place for the use of carfentrazone as Spotlight Plus for seed crops of linseed, but only for seed crops of linseed. So for the new crop, although the area of rape is much lower this year, there are now a number of crops drilled and in various states of establishment. As I said earlier, that dry run through August and into the first week of this month means that getting the seed into moisture in the seed bed in the first place has been a challenge. But those crops that have had a few showers, which is most of them, are now starting to think about growing away. And it's a good thing too, as we continue to see increasing cabbage stem flea beetle activity, and some local monitoring sites are actually starting now to pick up significant infestations of cabbage stem flea beetle adults. So important to monitor that pest very carefully. As I said last week though, with the KDR and the other metabolic resistance mechanisms now widespread throughout the adult cabbage stem flea beetle population, insecticides are likely to be variable and unreliable at best. They can do far more damage to the predator population, and although they can often knock that population of flea beetle back a little bit temporarily, you know, with things such as they are, that could possibly let the crop grow away, but you need to speak to your advisor and treat every field on its own merit. You should do everything else you can to help the rape through and ensure good nutrition instead of using insecticide. In, you know, seed bed nitrogen, that's a great start. Leaving longer stubbles has helped disrupt the flea beetle movement in the crop. Disguising the rape plants by applying alternative strong smells like garlic, digestate, slurries, organic manures. In some cases, that may help to reduce that damage, but there are four caveats in there, so be aware these things are not reliable, and some of them can be an expensive way of finding that out. Letting the volunteers grow a little bit larger makes the smaller rape plants less obvious to the flea beetle, but do be on top of volunteers. You don't want them much bigger than three or four leaves, because they can become very competitive very quickly and just smother the crop out, or at least stop it from growing away. Leaving all seed rape volunteers, by the way, in neighbouring fields was once thought to act like a trap crop for cabbage stem flea beetle, but more recently it's become very apparent that the flea beetle just move from those volunteers volunteers into the new crop. To be honest, just spray off any volunteers you've got on the farm. Don't forget to get any home safe cereal seed off for testing as soon as possible. Results typically taking a couple of weeks to come back. Some seed lots as well this year apparently showing very high levels of fusarium, so worth testing more than ever this season. And just check if those seed treatments are necessary, and I'm fairly sure based upon what we've seen for the cost of them, they probably will be. Plenty of ergot out there as well, so check seed lots carefully for that and consider cleaning it out if it is present. And of course, there's a lot of overwintered seed still on farm from last autumn that never got drilled, so you should get that retested for germination and vigour before you go bunging that in the ground as well. And although some soils have cracked quite well, it is noticeable that many have a very compactive layer from the soil surface down to about 7 inches or so. This year more than ever then, important to get assessing these soils carefully with a spade. Subsoiling, deep tines, moles, very useful in those cases, particularly on the heavier land. But knowing what you're dealing with means that you're not moving any more soil and spending any more money than you need to. On the heavier land at the moment, it's like blooming concrete. Very difficult to work at all. So this bit of rain will only do good. Also, weed control and the use of stale seed beds should be foremost in your sights. While things stay dry-ish, weed germination will be limited, and it's often more useful to leave stubbles untouched to allow the birds, etc., to get some of those grass weeds down them. Once things turn more suitable for germination, a little bit of rain, still warm like it is now, you should consider a light cultivation. And where grass weeds are expected to be a problem, that's going to help. That flash of UV light into the seedbed will only trigger them. The exception to that is where you've got soft meadow and ribrome, because as I said last week, burying those seeds can encourage their dormancy. So where grass weeds that you can manage are predominant weeds in your profile, then those stubbles should be the place you start, and cultivation will help that. Very little black grass movement yet in the stale seed beds. After that rain, it's unlikely that's going to last for too much longer. And with itchy trigger fingers on the drill tractors, autumn grass weed control really could be fun. Anyway, the swallows are still here. They're not lining up on the wires yet. So let's see what the next 7 days bring.
Thanks, Sean. Still to come, the weather for the week ahead, the market and crop reports, and we find out about British Food Fortnight.
The Farming Programme with Arrowquip Steel Stockholders, Withambrook Industrial Estate, Grantham. For all your steel needs, call their friendly experts.
The Week in Agriculture. This is the Farming Programme.
With difficult times in the farming sector, every chance we get to promote food production is very welcome. And that's exactly what British Food Fortnight is all about. I've been speaking to fullback farmer Ronnie Omsworth, who told me more.
20th of September until the 6th of October, and it's the 23rd year of the national celebration of the diverse and delicious food that Britain produces. It started way back in 2001, and the founder, Alexa Robinson, wanted to have a national campaign for British food following Foot and Mouth, and there wasn't one, and she created Love British Food, and this is the national campaign to promote what we grow and produce in this country.
And of course, there are benefits, obviously, for the farming industry, but for everybody at the table and for shops, etc. There's all sorts of things that this can benefit.
The people behind Love British Food, they are not funded by government. Any of us farmers, if we receive subsidies, we're not allowed to promote British food per se, other than through Love British Food. It's all due to state aid rules. So without Love British Food, we would struggle, I think, to get that message across about how well we rear our animals for food, grow the crop, the diversity of food we produce as well.
And we hear a lot about food security. This is one way of actually getting the message out there that there are huge advantages to having British food.
More important now than ever. I mean, we see that with an unstable world, either politically or with wars or with the environment and droughts or floods, it's more important now that we look after our own food production. See some food production being taken out to solar farms, for other diversifications. We are losing some land to food production, and we really do need to now get that message across to the public how important to buy British food and support the producers and the farmers. It's never been more important, and we have actually experienced nationally one of the worst harvests that we've had in 40 years, and that was due to the very poor wet conditions in the winter of 2023. So we've all been affected, all the farmers, including ourselves, by the weather conditions. We've had a reasonable crop personally. We need to all pull together on this.
What about shops? Because people can sort of go to the shops and think, oh, yes, I want to buy British, but maybe they can't find it or it's not obvious. What role do the shops play?
Big supermarkets are all coming on board now about food security, and they are having sections within the supermarkets really trying to promote British food. And I am very passionate about the family farm and the small producer. And we do have an enormous amount of farmers markets in the county. We're very, very lucky as consumers. We all need to support these farmers markets. Locally, we're very lucky in the village. We have a farmers market run by our landlord, and Alex is very good and gets lots of local food producers in. Think on a more basic level within your own family. So with the grandchildren, look up new recipes, or if you've got children, have a special meal with friends that's British inspired during this fortnight. Look out for special menus at the local pub, or shop at a local butcher's and see if, you know, they can give you more information.
Now, you mentioned about the shops there. Who else is getting involved? What other things will be taking place over this fortnight?
Website I'm going to give you is full of information. It's absolutely packed with resources for schools, for pubs, for restaurants, the councils. So a website for lots of information about Love British Food and British Food Fortnight. www.lovebritishfood.co.uk. And recipes, ideas, there are two competitions running at the moment. One is for a group or organisation that wants to bring the community together. Email British Food with what they're doing, and a winner will be chosen from that. And there's also a competition for chefs and caterers, and it's the pie competition. If small sectors would like to create a pie using British ingredients, then a pie will be chosen, and then that pub, that chef will win a prize.
Thank you, Ronnie.
Market reports.
Now it's time to say good morning to Edward Middleton from Louth Market with the livestock report.
Good morning, Andy. Starting off with the prime cattle, prime steers this week all in average 278.5 pence per kilo, and the prime heifers all in averaged 256.71 pence per kilo. Top price in the steers were in the pence per kilo and the pounds per head went to J.E. Thirlby of Kexby at 278.5 pence per kilo, or £1,726.70. In the heifers, in the pence per kilo went to R. Ray & Sons Limited of Lincoln at 279.5 pence per kilo, and in the pounds per head went to J.E. Thirlby of Kexby at £1,570.75. Moving on to the sheep, this week we had an SQQ of 283.2 pence per kilo, and an all-in average pounds per head of £124.15. The average this week back very slightly. This is due to a lot of store lambs in the mix, which would probably have been better sold in the stores. Meat and weight is really at premium this week to get those sort of premium prices. Saying that, the best lambs sold to a good trade. Top spot in the lambs went to J. Fussey & Sons of Lincoln. An excellent run of white-faced lambs topping at £152 for 63 kilos. JR and RC Jackson of Osgoby topped a marvellous run of well-finished Charolais lambs, topping at 150 twice, with another three pens at 145. In the cull ewes, numbers back on the previous week and trade again slightly steadier, with an average of £97.59. GL Lenton of Friskany topped the ewes with a mighty Texel ewe at 160 on two occasions. Johnson Farming of Ragby sold continental bred ewes to 142, with other pens at 139. As mentioned, again, a lot of lean ewes and grazing ewes in that mix, which has affected the averages. Onto the store lambs, a few more pens about this week, with a number of buyers are looking for store lambs at the moment. MK&R Nixon of Barrow up on Humber sold Texel bred lambs to £100. Just a quick report of Friday the 6th of September's second breeding sheep sale. Breeding rams topped at 950 guineas for EJ Benj of Horsington. Breeding gimmers went topped at £300 for P. Cole of Carbourne. Store lambs topped at £160 for M. Warden of Partney. And all in average, the store lambs averaged £92.10. That concludes this week's market report.
And with a grain market report, here's Openfield's Alice Killam.
Good morning, Andy. A more positive week, as I'm sure many will be pleased to hear. Let's start with the USDA report from Thursday evening. I make no excuse to head straight towards the details surrounding the cheapest product in the world, corn. US corn, to be exact. The US have actually increased their yield expected once again. Harvested acres are left unchanged, so a bigger production. They've sugared the pill very slightly by losing some tons on the way into the new crop season. In the report, the USDA are now predicting record corn yields in 9 states and record bean yields in 6 states. While production has been brought down a little, courtesy mostly of the EU. I would agree that these are still predictions, but even I would struggle to see how you could describe much of this as bullish data. Preceding the release of the US data, we've actually seen some further moves up. This has been mostly European movement on the back of fund money, reducing their short and bearish position. It is being widely reported that the funds short in the Matif wheat market have now been halved from 10 million tonnes short to 5. If you look at the US numbers, they would support this too. There has definitely been a change in sentiment in recent days. With the US data indicating big yields that will only get bigger, why the change in direction? If you delve deeper, I think that there is now an argument that quite a lot of business has now been done at these levels. We've discussed quite a bit now that the US is indeed covering quite a lot of export of these numbers. And if you look further east, Russia and Ukraine are doing the same. Ukraine's exports are already well over 4 million tonnes for the new season. They will run out if they continue at this pace. The weather stories in Russia and the Black Sea do not want to go away either. Essentially, we have very dry weather in the south, hurting the maize crops, and very wet in the far east, with states of emergency being called. Lots of looking at maps in the coming days, I expect, but this weather will not have escaped the notice of the funds. Let's bring it back to the UK then. A decent couple of days for us. Futures came off a little after the release of the USDA numbers, but still sit higher week on week. The pull is for feed wheat both in the spot and the forward positions, which is creating a good carry for us. This, I believe, is an opportunity. Good soft wheats are being pulled along for the ride, with the only real issue being milling wheat. I agree with many that this narrative will change throughout the season. It will seemingly go from feast to famine, and I do think that in the further forward positions, these guys have quite a bit to buy. But short term, we are getting clogged up with the imported business, which has now entered the country. This is not new business. Much of this would have taken place months ago, but it's a good reason why demand in the spot has fallen. As I was reminded yesterday, though, it is only early September, so don't panic yet. Barley has certainly picked up off the bottom. The large malting barley crop is beginning to move in earnest next month when the large boat programme begins. We just need to make a good start. If we can get things moving, this will help the whole barley market and stop it all getting clogged up at the very end of the season. Some guide prices then, circa Friday morning. Feed wheat, September 175 to 185, November 180 to 190, May 190 to 200, with Group 1 milling premium still holding at around £50 to £60. Feed barley, October 150 to 160, February 155 to 165, May 160 to 170, all seed rape, October 390 to 395, and May 400 to 405. As usual, please call for firm values.
The Farming Programme. 5-day forecast.
And the headline for the weather this week, a little bit warmer, a good chance of being somewhat drier too. Now today the odd shower is possible, but mostly dry, largely cloudy, with fairly light breezes, highs at 17 Celsius. Not too much of a breeze on Monday, and rather sunny, 19 the high, going up a little bit. Tuesday similar to that, and then for the end of the week, dry, fairly sunny, possibly getting into the low 20s. Well, that's it from me. I'm sitting in for Steve next week. I'll speak to you then.
The Farming Programme with Arroquip Steel Stockholders, Withambrook Industrial Estate Grantham. BSI ISO 9001 accredited.